coming up on the Jordan Harbinger Show.
Fake pornography has a long history, so this is not just a photoshopped image of a celebrity's face stuck onto a porn star's body. This is a real live video where the celebrity is moving her face. She's got different expressions. AI is getting better and better, so less training data is needed. I can make a nude image of your sister, your wife, your mom, and young girls from a single photo, for example. And there were over 100,000 of these images just being publicly passed around in these Telegram groups. The key point is the AI can basically be used to hijack anyone's biometrics. So it's pretty clear that it's going to leech out into other forms of malicious use with fraud, with political disinformation as a tool of intimidation. We're already starting to see that.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. On the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most fascinating people. We have in-depth conversations with people at the top of their game. Astronauts and entrepreneurs, spies and psychologists, even the occasional billionaire investor, rocket scientist, or extreme athlete. And each episode turns our guests' wisdom into practical advice that you can use to build a deeper understanding of how the world works and become a better critical thinker. If you're new to the show or you're looking for a handy way to tell your friends about it, we now have episode starter packs. These are collections of your favorite episodes organized by popular topics to help new listeners get a taste of everything we do here on this show. Just visit jordanharbinger.com/start to get started or to help somebody else get started. And of course, we always appreciate that. Today's episode is about deep fakes, which is an incredible phenomenon that if you haven't heard about it yet, this is about to rock your world. And if you're listening to this in 5-10 years, you're going to be like, what? This was news? How did you not know about this? I'm serious. This is going to take the world by storm. This is not hyperbole. Deepfakes are essentially software/computer-created videos that are, of course, synthetically generated, but they look like they were filmed. So it's synthetic media. You may have just recently seen some video of Tom Cruise doing a magic trick, and then you find out it's not Tom Cruise at all, but some guy on TikTok with some software. That's a deepfake. Seems harmless, right? Kind of a novelty thing. Well, it all depends on the application. What if deepfakes are used to create disinformation? What if they're used to create or discredit evidence in a trial? What if they're used to create revenge porn about somebody that you know? What if it's about a minor? Well, it turns out this is already happening. Today on the show, my friend Nina Schick and I discuss where this deepfakes phenomenon is going, how it's being weaponized against us, and what we can do about it. You like that dramatic pause right there? Very intense, right? I think this episode was fascinating, and it's a great intersection of technology, social engineering, information warfare, and the internet. And Nina really is the expert in this area, so I think you're going to love this conversation as much as I did. And if you are wondering how I book great, amazing folks like Nina all the time, these authors, thinkers, and creators, it's because of my network. I'm teaching you how to build a network just like mine, whether it's for business or personal reasons. Just check out jordanharbinger.com/course. It's free. I don't need your credit card. None of that stuff. Just go to jordanharbinger.com/course. And by the way, many of the guests you hear on the show, they subscribe to the course. So come join us and you'll be in smart company where you belong. Now, here's Nina Schick. Deepfakes are interesting for me because this is something that I'd seen used in various instances. And we'll get into that here later in the show. Obviously, there's some sort of, I hate to say obvious use, but like the first thing people think of and a lot of people's first exposure to deepfakes is something to do with celebrities. And I'll let you explain that so I don't come across as the creep that I'm going to if I start off with it. But also, it can threaten our democracy, which is usually you don't equate like revenge porn with democratic threats or threats to the existence of the American or Western way of life. And I want to get into that here in the show because what sort of technology could possibly be that powerful? Can you define what a deepfake is first for people who don't know?
Sure. Well, a deepfake is essentially a type of synthetic or fake media. So that's to say a video, a piece of audio, or an image that's either been manipulated by artificial intelligence or wholly generated by AI. And this amazing ability of AI basically to create fake media has only been possible really for about the last 5 years, and it's getting better and better and better. One of the things that's very interesting about it is that it's very good at recreating humans. And all that you need in order for AI to basically learn how to recreate a human is the right training data. So let's say, this has already been done, by the way, you want to get a machine learning system to generate images of fake people. You need to train it on a data set of lots of human faces. And then voila, you basically have an AI system that can now, at the click of a button, generate a fake human face that looks so authentic, so real, that to the naked human eye, you can't tell it's not real. And if you want to check it out, you can check out This Person Does Not Exist just to see how amazing it is at doing that.
That's thispersondoesnotexist.com, right? This is a website?
Exactly.
And I'm thinking, okay, where do we get a huge database of human faces that are all digitized? And the answer is what? Facebook? Instagram?
Facebook, Google search. Very, very, very easy. The thing that is really alarming. Okay, so this instance, right? You're talking about people who don't exist. AI can make these faces that look like real images. But another thing it can do is it's very good at basically, I call it hijacking your biometrics. So if you have a digital footprint, and who doesn't online, right? An image on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever, or a piece of audio of your voice, somebody can take that piece of data and get an AI to basically learn how you look and sound and make a deep fake of you saying and doing things that you never said and did. So it's not only very good at generating fake people, it's very good at generating you in fake scenarios. And the key thing is, again, we're just at the very, very beginning of this technology. So the amount of training data that's needed is going to be less and less and less, to the extent where it's only a couple of seconds of your voice or a single image taken from Instagram, Facebook, wherever, that's enough to make you the target of a deepfake.
So to be really clear here, this is not someone editing media in a deceptive way. It's not me saying something like, well, I'm not racist, and then taking out the word not, and then it's me admitting I'm a racist or something like that, right? It's not taking things out of context. It's creating new fake media out of whole cloth, often not using anything that I created that's even in the same context or in the same subject line. This is maybe something like and there are legit uses of this that are exciting, right? Like Disney can remake a movie and put Audrey Hepburn and Frank Sinatra acting right next to each other, and then they can remake an entire movie based on that, and it will look just like those two people acting, which actually brings up a whole bunch of interesting questions from a legal perspective about, like, what do those people's estates get paid an acting fee for their dead relative performing? That's probably a different show and a different topic. But it's scary because, you know, we've seen like and we'll get to some of these examples later. We've seen like politicians be creatively edited, but this is like three levels up from just a slowing down the video or something like that. And it can be used in pretty horrible ways. People don't really notice when you go to thispersondoesnotexist.com. I kind of expected these cartoonish looking faces where like things were off a little. And I was like, you know, see how this eye looks. You can't tell that it's fake.
No,
that's the scariest part. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, remember the dancing baby video where it's like a little baby dancing around in this cartoon? It doesn't look like a real baby dancing. Now you could make someone's actual baby do that and it would look as real, almost as real as if it were a video of their baby dancing. And that's scary.
Absolutely. It is scary. And you're absolutely right to point out, however, and I think this is probably something we should tackle right at the top. Mm-hmm. It's not only going to be used maliciously, right? Just like every amazing technology of the exponential age, it's going to be a massive amplifier of human intention. So I think what we're looking at here, when you think about synthetic media, that's media that's created by AI. It's such a paradigm changer that I think it's just going to be just as important in the history of human communication and in the history of the development of human society as the internet. Because increasingly, the way we produce media and consume media is going to be led by AI. It's increasingly going to become synthetic. Some experts who I interviewed when I was writing my book think that in as little as a decade's time, 90% of video content online could be synthetic. The problem is that we're no longer going to know what's authentic and what's synthetic. So you really lose your touch on what is real, what is reality, because thus far, you kind of still accept that what you see and hear is real, right? It's an extension of your own perception. We know there's been a long history of like tampering with the visual record that goes way back into the 19th century. for example, Stalin, the Soviet dictator, used to like there was an entire cottage industry that developed under his brutal regime that was dedicated to tampering with historical photographs. So every time his enemies were executed, you know, they'd be kind of scratched out of and removed and edited out of photographs. But this is far more sophisticated than that. And it's also going to become accessible to everyone. So when you are talking about Hollywood level effects today, you still need a multi-million dollar budget. You need teams of special effects artists to achieve something that the best kind of Hollywood effects are. But by the end of the decade, a YouTuber with a budget of zero will be able to make the same type of thing, not only in image, but even in video form. And video is just becoming such an important mode of human communication. So you're essentially looking at a future where synthetic media is going to become ubiquitous. On the good side, it's going to completely transform entire industries. Entertainment is going to become amazing. It's going to rewrite fashion and corporate communications. However, on the negative side, it's going to become the most powerful tool of visual disinformation known to humanity. Mm-hmm. And not only that, it's going to become accessible to everyone. So you're not just talking about a state actor or a terrorist group. Any teenager can create a deep fake because the AI will do all the heavy lifting.
There's a lot to unpack there, and most of it is unfortunately kind of scary. I mean, it will be cool to be able to talk to a dead relative and get close. I don't know how this would work from a therapeutic standpoint, but to get closure or to like imagine a lonely child whose parent is away, deployed in a military scenario or on a business trip, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, their time. They can't call that person, but they can be comforted at night by that person. Or even just babies can get comforted by an AI mom who's finally getting some sleep. And I know you and I kind of have that. That's like the first application I want for this thing, right? The AI parent who just tells them to go back to sleep, for God's sake, for the 18th time at night. But it becomes more scary. The Stalin thing is creepy, right? I mean, so you're saying there was a group of people sitting in a basement somewhere and they said, hey, that guy who's in all these photos with the leader, he's been disappeared. We want to make sure that it looks like he never existed, which is very 1984, where they kind of reprint the old newspapers to say, we've always been at war with South Eurasia. That seems like a miserable job, especially when they ask to take you out of the photos, to do it to yourself. But the fact that any teenager can do this and there's no longer kind of any oversight or any decision-making body, even if it is a terrible dictator, who's making the moves that we can monitor. It's just like some kid in the class made a video of another kid in the class. And now that's the bullying that happened. You can't put that toothpaste back in the tube when there's a deep fake app that everybody gets for free from the App Store and it runs on their iPhone 25.
Yeah, there's already actually dozens of deep fake apps. And this is what I mean about this technology becoming accessible to almost everyone. Like, what's changed in the past 30 years when you think about how we communicate in this global information ecosystem? Well, what's changed is the internet, social media, and smartphones, right? More than half of the world is connected into this ecosystem with a device that they hold in their hand. And the other half of the world who hasn't joined yet will be joining within the next 10 years. And on this device, you're going to be able to have the most sophisticated tools of visual tampering that we have known, right? It's going to be very, very easy to kind of use these apps to create deepfakes. You already see dozens of deepfake apps that have been exploding on the App Store. Again, look at the timeline here. This technology only started becoming available about 3 years ago. Can you imagine where we're going to be in 10 years' time? And I think you're really right to point out, you know, there obviously are going to be like bad use cases, good use cases, but there are profound philosophical questions that we need to answer as a society as well. To what extent, for example, is it permissible? Should it be permissible for us to interact with relatives back from the dead, for example, as a form of therapy? Is that okay if we resurrect them using AI to emulate their voice to speak to us? Or does that mean that we're retreating further and further from what is reality? And I think at the heart of it, this is a really philosophical question about, are there forms of communication as we go forward that should be entirely authentic and organic, or can everything become synthesized in future? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is it even desirable?
Yeah, I think about this probably more than I more than normal people do, because there are so many thousands of hours of my voice out there and hundreds of hours of my face and my voice talking at the same time. So any expression that I have, the unshaven version of me that you're looking at right now versus like the clean cut version that I might have had we done this interview an hour from now, right? Like all of these variants are available. And it's cool to think that my great grandchildren can be like, great grandpa Jordan, what would you have done in this situation? And my super smart AI can look over like 10,000 hours of my show and give good advice based on that. Not that it would be relevant in 100 years, but you never know. But the downside is much more obvious and probably going to be much more common. And it reminds me of sort of every dystopian sci-fi movie ever where Joaquin Phoenix orders an AI girlfriend from the internet. Have you seen this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Her, I think it's called. And she ends up being super smart and talking with like a million guys at the same time and then just vanishes and says like, to hell with humanity. That's the good outcome that we can get. The other one is everyone is trapped in a box talking with their AI friends and family because the real version is completely incapable of human interaction at that point.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you can frame this as, you know, is this going to become the end of reality? I mean, what is reality? It's just an extension of your perception. But if what you perceive is no longer actually real, you know, what is happening in your life? And I think there is this danger that you retreat further and further into these virtual worlds. But I think the most potent danger directly with the threat of deepfakes is very specific to liberal democracies. And that is that in order for a liberal democratic society to work, you need to have some kind of common basis of what is objective fact, what is reality. Because if you don't even agree the basic facts, you're not going to be able to agree to do anything in society. If you corrode the very notion that there is an objective reality, then you basically corrode the very fabric of what's holding democratic society together. And you see this with the increasing polarizing trends in Western democratic countries today. You see it very vividly in the United States, for instance. So you can imagine how much worse it's going to become when there is, you know, a deepfake to support every theory you might have. There's going to be no room for people to come together and compromise, which, of course, is going to be devastating for a democratic style of government. It could be a very powerful tool for an authoritarian regime, because you basically create a reality that isn't real and say, this is the truth. It's interesting to see that all governments from the United States to China and Russia are investing heavily in artificial intelligence, and synthetic media is a big part of that. Their militaries are doing a lot of research into it.
Yeah, that's terrifying, because I can see right now, I mean, I work a lot with China and I talk to Chinese people pretty much every day because I take Mandarin lessons in the morning. And I'm like the dangerous client they have, because I go, don't you think it's weird that you can't say Winnie the Pooh? And they're like, but then 10 lessons in, when they trust me, they're like, yeah, it's so weird that we can't say things in WeChat because it'll get deleted. And it's so weird that a colleague of mine has a red notice next to his picture that says this person doesn't pay his debts, so his social clout score is decreased. And it's only a matter of time. Like, if China gets this, and I don't know what the United States will do, and I'm not saying it'll be a better thing than what China is doing, but when I can tell you what China will do is they will create a reality that they shove down everyone's throat. And if somebody creates a different one or shows the real version of a video that's similar, that person will vanish or they will be completely unable to communicate. And they have this great firewall of China, as it's called, that will search for unauthenticated videos that someone has made, or unauthenticated videos that are actually the video that's the real version of events. Those things will get shut down very quickly. They can already do that. So it's only going to improve in a decade.
Exactly. And you're touching on one of the key points here with deepfakes, and it's literally called the liar's dividend. It's the flip side of the coin. So we're increasingly going to be in this future where everything can be faked, right? Including video, which to this day, we kind of see as hard proof, as evidence, which is why it's so powerful, for example, in a trial. But the flip side is that everything that's authentic can also be denied. Because if everything can be faked, everything can be denied. And that means that bad actors get lots of leeway to get away with things that otherwise would have been caught and documented and seen as evidence of their wrongdoing. And we're already starting to see that, because even before synthetic media becomes ubiquitous, we're not there yet, right? We're just at the very, very start of the deepfake journey. we're already starting to see real life political events where authentic media has been decried as a deep fake to basically let bad actors get away with their actions. The interesting point about China I'll make specifically in regard to deep fakes is that China is the only country that has a blanket law that bans deep fakes.
Wow.
So essentially what that means is the central government has the power to say what piece of media is authentic or not.
Yeah, that's scary. Like many things, authoritarian / Chinese Communist Party. And again, I always have to clarify the difference between the CCP and the people of China. The people of China have nothing to do with this. It's really scary that the government says, okay, you know what? This is real. I get why it sounds like a good idea, because, hey, we need a central authority that can tell if something is fake or something is real because of deepfake. So we're just going to take that power. But then it's like, well, wait, how do I know that you're not lying about what's real? And the answer is you don't. And that is the classic sort of technological authoritarian dilemma is, this is for your own protection. Trust me, you definitely want this. And people go, yeah, you're probably right. And then like 10 years later, they're like, how the hell did we agree to let this happen? And this is how it happens. The appeal of an authoritarian government in the first place is, we got to figure out what the hell's going on. You know what? I'll do it. I'll clean up all the things that are confusing for you and all of the things that you feel are destabilizing. I will clean that up for you. In return, you just have to live in the exact way that I want to, and you don't have any pesky freedom to get in the way of a productive society.
Exactly. And that problem is actually going to be felt even in the West as well, right? Because
sure,
as knowledge of deepfakes and synthetic media starts to broaden, the kind of distrust in society, this crisis of trust, lack of faith in institutions, mainstream media, a lot of it justified, by the way, it's only going to augment. And if somebody says, well, I'm going to be the central government, the government of the USA is going to be the authority on telling you what's authentic media, what's synthetic media, what's a deep fake or not, or Twitter is, or Facebook is, you can see why that's going to go down like a pile of sick amongst a certain part of the electorate, right? Who are you to tell me what's real and what's not? So I think this distrust that you see in societies, just the knowledge that synthetic media exists is actually going to harden that distrust and augment the liar's dividend even before we start seeing loads of deepfakes out in the wild.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Nina Schick. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored in part by SimpliSafe. If you have 30 free minutes, you never have to worry about a break-in at home ever again. That's how quick and easy it is to set up a security system from SimpliSafe. It's the kind of thing that is so easy to do, you can do it during a Netflix binge, watching the game, or listening to a certain podcast. SimpliSafe is incredibly easy to customize for your home. You go to simplisafe.com/Jordan, choose the sensors you need, glass break, door sensors, whatever it is. It'll get to your house in about a week, which means by this time next week, you and your whole family can go to bed knowing your home is being guarded. If you're like me and frustrated with some technology some of the time, I know Jen wrote this copy because I wouldn't have said that about myself, I can attest that I was able to easily set everything up myself. And you can also get help from one of SimpliSafe's experts. You know it's legit when our friend that runs personal protection for high net worth families also recommends SimpliSafe.
It's easy to assume everyone in your house already feels safe, but they might not, and it's worthwhile to talk about. And SimpliSafe is a small, easy step to make sure everyone feels safe at home. Go to simplisafe.com/Jordan today to customize your system and get a free security camera. That's simplisafe.com/Jordan today.
This episode is also sponsored by Purple Mattress. As the world becomes increasingly uncomfortable, we're all looking for as much comfort as we can get. And this is a true story, and I'll tell the full version on a Feedback Friday here. But I was at the mall with Jen one day, when not 2 seconds after I was having a conversation about the benefits of not being super famous because I'm unshaven, I'm gross, I get a horrible stomach ache, I'm ready to like crap myself at the mall, and I'm thinking we're going home soon, we hear Jordan Harbinger, oh my God, Jordan Harbinger, from across the mall. Next thing you know, I'm taking photos with this guy who spotted me. It's the day before his wedding. He's buying shoes. Meanwhile, I'm about to lose control of my bowels in a selfie photo. So talk about an uncomfortable situation. But the one thing I can always count on is how comfortable my Purple mattress pillow is. Like that transition? That's because Purple is comfort reinvented. Only Purple has the grid. It's a stretchy gel material that's amazingly supportive for your back and legs while cushioning your shoulders, your neck, your hips. I don't know how it does it. It's just fantastic. It's designed really well. The grid doesn't trap air. Air actually circulates and flows through it, so you're never overheating. You never want to underestimate the cool side of the pillow, right? The grid bounces back, it moves, it shifts, unlike memory foam, which unfortunately remembers everything, kind of like that story earlier that I remember. Memory foam has craters and divots, so the grid will make sure your purple pillow is always staying cool and refreshing on the cheek.
And right now, you can try Purple Mattress risk-free with free shipping and returns. Financing is available too. Purple really is comfort for an uncomfortable world. Right now, you'll get 10% off any order of $200 or more. Go to purple.com/Jordan10 and use promo code Jordan10. That's purple.com/Jordan10, promo code Jordan10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/Jordan10, promo code Jordan10. Terms apply.
And now back to Nina Schick on the Jordan Harbinger Show. Look, as a former attorney, I'm just waiting for a trial where there's a videotape of the defendant walking into a convenience store, whacking the clerk over the head with a club or something, ripping out the cash from the cash drawer. And he goes, "Your Honor, that wasn't me. That is a deep fake. I was at home watching Netflix at the time." And then they're going to have to go through the government's going to have to spend $80,000 authenticating the video frame by frame with some sort of expertise. Hopefully AI can do that, but it's looking like that. The arms race of being able to detect one AI that's created using another AI. Actually, do you know anything about that? Like, how are we with detection here?
So the first thing to say is that when AI started to be able to synthetically generate this media, it's been hugely exciting to the AI research community, right? It was a massive breakthrough that they got to this place where AI could not just categorize. So this is kind of what they do, for example, to use driverless cars. So categorize things, but actually create something, generate something. So there's been a tremendous amount of interest to work on the generation side. It pretty quickly became clear that this could potentially be a problem. And then there have been research efforts on the detection side as well. What's been covering us for the past 3 years in terms of detection has largely been digital kind of forensics. So researchers looking at fake videos, being like, "Oh, okay, we can tell that this is fake because the eyes are not blinking correctly, or behind the ears, the background is blurred." So kind of looking for telltale signs. However, that is only ever going to be a plaster, right? Because AI is getting constantly better. So you can't rely on using these kind of forensics methods to identify deepfakes, not only because they won't exist pretty soon, and also because when they become ubiquitous, it's going to be impossible to use a human detector, right? You're not going to have enough manpower to look through all the videos and kind of frame by frame look at which are real and which are not. So then you have to think about building an actual AI detector. Can you get AI to find something in the DNA of a piece of media to show that it's not authentic, that it's synthetically generated? Mm. The problem is that this is always going to be an adversarial game, because the better the detector gets, the better the generator can become. So as soon as you build a really world-class detector, the people who are building the generator can kind of look at what the detector is doing and find a way to beat it. And the second problem is that there are so many different ways of generating deepfakes that you're never going to have one size fits all, right? You're never going to have one model, which is going to be the ultimate detector, which you can put on all social media platforms to show you that a piece of content is synthetic or a deepfake. It's just not going to happen. So you're going to have to build lots and lots of different models to find all these different deepfakes in the wild. And the jury is still out as to whether or not you get to a point where the generation sides of the AI become so good that you can never find a detector to tell that this is a piece of synthetic media. So can the AI become so good that even AI can't detect that it is synthetic?
That's kind of inevitable almost, right? And even in the interim, it'll come down to the person. They'll say like, "Oh, is that the real Jordan or the fake one?" And then somebody who's got like a million hours of my videos is going to go, "Nope, my AI detector says that the real Jordan's left nostril is slightly smaller than the right nostril. And it's imperceptible by the human eye, but the computer can tell. And look, the AI version has two perfectly symmetrical nostrils. This is fake," you know? And then, but even then, you know, if you're really working, like if I really want to make a deep fake of you or me, the AI will go, "You know what? He's got two sort of different nostrils, and one, her dimple on the right is deeper than the dimple on her left by like this imperceptible amount." They're just going to fake that. That blip of detection, like any window we have for detecting, is just going to get erased within Well, with AI, within minutes, days, hours, a year, I mean, I don't really know. The technology, when you explained in the book how quickly this tech moves, I was blown away. Can you tell me about The Irishman? That was something where I just went, okay, this is like coming at us like a train.
Yeah, I mean, a really powerful way to demonstrate just how incredible this technology is when you consider The Irishman, right? Martin Scorsese's latest blockbuster film. The storyline spans 7 decades, and the big challenge he wanted to take was to kind of bring the old ensemble back together, Joe Pesci, Robert De Niro. But he wanted to de-age his actors, right, to make them young again so he can tell this story over these 7 decades. He started his project in 2015, and in order to do it, they knew it would be a big technical challenge and a lot of special effects work. He had to basically film with this 3-rig camera. He said it was awful. It was very, very cumbersome, annoying. And then they had a lot of post-production work. And if you went and saw the movie, by the way, the budget was in the millions of dollars, and the movie came out in 2019. If you went and saw it in the cinema, it didn't bridge Uncanny Valley in the sense that you could kind of tell that it didn't look quite right, right? The de-aging effect. Kind of good, but not entirely convincing. Fast forward to 2020, just last year, and a YouTuber basically took free AI software. He had a budget of zero. And he, in a week, taking kind of the footage from The Irishman, had a go at de-aging the protagonist. And you can see it on YouTube. His result is arguably it is far, far better than anything Scorsese was able to achieve over 5 years with lots of help, huge budget, and teams of special effects artists. So that's the power of AI.
The budget for, I looked this up, the budget for The Irishman, and this includes actor salaries and catering and everything, but still, $159 million. Let's assume that at least $1 million of those dollars was for the de-aging. It was probably a lot more than that. And this YouTuber did it with the gaming PC that he uses to play Fortnite on or whatever, right? So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the barrier to entry, sometimes when you see like the public debate on deepfakes, you know, you can imagine that, oh my God, I could just go and do this on my smartphone now. I could make a video of you using a racial slur. Mm-hmm. But the barrier to entry is still higher than that. You still need to have some level of expertise to make a really good deepfake. You need to have a computer with a lot of processing power. However, the trend, the direction of travel is clear. These barriers that are basically technical are not going to be there for much longer. Like I said, by the end of the decade, according to some experts, 90% of the video content online is going to be synthetic.
There's a concept called, and brief aside, we may have covered this. I just don't know. There's a concept called processing fluency. What is this, and what does this mean in terms of humans believing what they hear and see?
The reason why deepfakes are just so visceral and powerful, right, is because they're visual media. Processing fluency is basically concept that psychologists use to refer to the fact that we as humans, when we see something that looks and sounds right, we want to believe it's true. We're hardwired to do that. It's far more difficult for us to read something, a piece of text on a piece of paper that makes outrageous claims and think that's true. Far, far different when it comes to visual media. And the kind of Rubicon, if you will, when it comes to the manipulation of visual media thus far, because technology has consistently made it easier for visual media to be manipulated, right? In the 20th century, you had Stalin with his craftspeople kind of working 20 hours on each photograph to unperson people. Okay, by the time the Soviet Union fell in 1990, you had the release of Photoshop, the first kind of mass market image manipulation software. To this day, 30 years later, people still look at images, be they on Instagram, the front of a magazine cover, and they don't realize that those images are edited, right? People think that they're real. But video was still pretty much in the domain of Hollywood. To really create a video piece of visual media that was manipulated to a highly sophisticated degree, you would still have the need for special effects artists, big, big, big budget. However, deepfakes and AI is going to blow all of that out of the water. So if you think about how powerful visual media is to us, first of all, just because we're wired to want to believe it, but also in the changing context of our information ecosystem, right? Again, over the past 30 years, smartphone, internet, social media, so much of the content that we interact with is visual. It has to be. It's the only thing that kind of grabs us. This is potentially leading to this perfect storm where you're tearing away the barriers to manipulating even the most sophisticated type of media, the thing that was hardest to do, video. And you're doing it in this environment where everybody in the world is not only consuming video, but producing video as well. I think it's 80% of internet traffic next year is going to be driven by video uploads and downloads. And there's another risk factor here, which is that perhaps in the Western world, where we've had a bit more time to kind of deal with the internet, understand some of the ramifications and the darker sides of the disinformation. We've seen it, for instance, around COVID. There is a degree of digital literacy. Mm-hmm. However, when you start talking about the other half of the world that has yet to join, that is soon going to be joining this information ecosystem, mostly in India and Africa, it is potentially even more damaging because the degree of digital literacy is obviously far lower. They're unprepared.
Right. Yeah, they are unprepared. And speaking of India, and this is a good transition here, there was a case of, I guess, deep fake porn used against a journalist in India. And it was very effective because, well, one, that type of thing would be very effective generally in a conservative society, I would imagine. But also, India has low media literacy. I don't know exactly what that means. Why don't you define it? And can you place India on maybe a spectrum with the US and Canada? Because I would suspect the United States has higher media literacy, but I don't know by how much, because I talk to my parents and their friends and I'm like, that, what you believe, that thing you read it on like West Texas Patriot blog, it's not a news source. It's written by a guy in a basement. He made it up.
Yeah, you're right to bring up the case of deepfake porn, because I don't think we've discussed it yet, but the kind of first application of deepfakes, the most malicious and widespread use, mm-hmm. is in non-consensual pornography. So when these tools started leaching out of the AI research community, the first place that deepfakes basically bared their head on the internet was on Reddit at the end of 2017. And this is where I first came across them. And the name deepfakes has stuck because the guy that was creating them was calling himself deepfakes. He was a Redditor called deepfakes, which was a portmanteau of deep learning and fakes. Mm. And he basically figured out how to use these free AI tools to create fake porn videos of famous female celebrities. And he posted them on Reddit and then told other Redditors how he had done it. And fake pornography has a long history, so this is nothing new, the idea. But the creations were just unlike anything anyone had seen before. This is not just a photoshopped image of a celebrity's face stuck onto a porn star's body. This is a real live video where the celebrity is moving her face. She's got different expressions. The training data he used to create those was pretty easily available on Google image search, just videos and images. And as soon as he revealed how he had done it, Reddit went wild. Other people started creating their own deepfakes. There was a furore, and all the deepfake porn was basically banned off of Reddit. But since then, an entire deepfake porn ecosystem has developed online. It's very, very easy to find deepfake porn of every female celebrity imaginable, also political personalities, everyone from Ivanka Trump to Michelle Obama. But it is undeniably a gendered phenomenon, right? This is primarily targeted against women. And the alarming thing is, it's not just celebrities. Normal women are being targeted now as well. Because as I mentioned, the training data, the AI is getting better and better. So less training data is needed. I can make a nude image of your sister, your wife, your mom from a single photo, for example, from Facebook. And it's not only women that are being targeted. Now minors are being targeted as well. There was a case last year where basically they found a bot being hosted on Telegram, which is basically being used to generate fake images, nude images of normal women and young girls. And there were over 100,000 of these images just being publicly passed around in these Telegram groups. The key point is, it's not a tawdry women's issue. Right? Because the AI can basically be used to hijack anyone's biometrics. So it's pretty clear that it's going to leach out into other forms of malicious use. We're already starting to see that with fraud, with political disinformation as a tool of intimidation. So this instance that you mentioned about this journalist in India, it was a case of somebody who is a very outspoken investigative journalist who was critical of the ruling Hindu Nationalist Party. So she was kind of a thorn in the side of the government. And there was a very contentious case which she was speaking out publicly upon, involving, you know, a child, somebody who had been accused of child rape. And she said things that were obviously not in line with what some powerful people in the government wanted to hear. And she basically became targeted with a deepfake porn video. And to any woman, this would be an utterly humiliating, devastating experience, perhaps even more so if, you know, you're in India, where the status of women in society, I mean, I'm half South Asian, and being a woman in South Asia is probably one of the worst places in the world where you can be a woman. So not only was this fake video released, but all her personal information was released as well. Her telephone number, her address, she was doxxed. And she just became subject to this absolute campaign of harassment. People were emailing her, calling her, asking her for her rates of sex. She's a brave woman, right? She's this kind of intrepid investigative journalist. But that experience really scared her. And she even spoke about it later, saying, it changed me. You know, I wish I had kind of the courage to just do what I did before, but that kind of hit too deep. So I think going back to the digital literacy question, yes, it was very effective in India, but you can see how something like that would be just as effective in Canada or in the United States. Actually, now we're starting to see this deep fake creation marketplace emerge on the internet, where business executives are being targeted either by deep fake porn, or, you know, perhaps you can imagine how in this environment, if a video or an audio clip of you emerged using a racial slur, how that could potentially devastate your career and your business. So porn is the beginning. There are going to be many, many other use cases. And in terms of digital literacy, yes, in a place like India, it could potentially do more damage, but, you know, just as much damage in Canada and the United States as well.
Sure. Yeah. Look, we feel bad for celebrities and public figures when this happens, but how are we going to feel when it's so easy that people are doing this and creating this for little kids in their seventh grade class? I mean, we're talking about potentially life-altering consequences for kids involved in this, whether it's a kid making it as a prank and getting in trouble and getting kicked out of school or getting arrested, or the little girl that is the subject of the video, which now has essentially this horrific child pornography floating around that everyone's laughing at, and she's seven. Or 10.
Yeah, and that's actually what I'm more worried about, because I think when I first came to deepfakes and when I started researching and seeing what was going on, your mind goes to celebrities or how it can be used as disinformation against political figures. But the reality is that these people are well-resourced, right? They can lawyer up. They have teams of people that can rebut. You know, they have PR teams, crisis comms. But what happens, like you said, if it's your seven-year-old child who's being bullied at school with a fake video or a nude image, which, by the way, is very, very easy to do right now. And as I already mentioned, they exist and they're being publicly shared. And I think this is really, for me, one of the most alarming things about the malicious use of deepfakes, is that we're not just talking about celebrities and politicians. We're talking about you, me, our children. Every individual can be targeted in a very harmful way because, again, as I mentioned, the training data that's needed is becoming less and less.
This is the Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Nina Schick. We'll be right back. This episode is also sponsored by Movement Watches. In a tiny apartment in Southern California, two college dropouts teamed up to create a watch company that broke all the rules. With fair prices, unexpected colors, and clean, original designs, Movement grew into one of the fastest-growing watch brands, shipping to over 160 countries across the globe. I've been wearing the Jet Noir Arc automatic watch, and I like that it's durable and it's not heavy. I've accidentally banged the watch against the undersides of tables. I do that all the time with watches, by the way. I bang it against something like 2 hours after I put it on. I was kicking myself, but then I noticed the marks wiped right off, and it doesn't break the bank. It's high quality for a reasonable price because they own the process from start to finish. You get a beautiful watch shipped right to your door for free, and if you don't love it, just ship it right back, also for free. Now Movement has expanded into blue light glasses that protect your eyes from your screens, minimalist jewelry, and more style essentials that don't break the bank, all designed out of their California HQ.
If you want to elevate your look with style that doesn't break the bank, then join the Movement and get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/Jordan. Again, that's mvmt.com/Jordan.
This episode is sponsored in part by HostGator. Sure, I used to be just like you, adrift, without a website to call my own, on a merciless internet that didn't care if I came across to the world like some kind of schmuck in a Google search. But then, somebody introduced me to HostGator, and I wised up real quick, see? I came in from the cold and took control over my internet presence, and best of all, it was super simple, and it didn't cost me an arm or a leg or even a secret family recipe. HostGator has plans that start at $2.64 for our listeners. It's an oddly specific number. Let's be honest, that's cheaper than a lot of parking meters. HostGator offers a 45-day complete money-back guarantee. And HostGator hosts over 2 million websites. They've got 18-plus years of experience in supporting website owners with 24/7, 365 support. So you're never going to be on your own when it comes to managing your website. It's time to make it official. Go to HostGator.com/Jordan right now to get started. HostGator.com/Jordan. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I love the fact that I'm able to create this for you. My team loves that we create this for you. Please do consider supporting those who support us. And I know you're thinking, oh, but I can't remember the codes. They're hard to remember. Is it /Jordan or /Jordan10? Don't worry about that. Just go to jordanharbinger.com/deals. That's where you find all those codes, everything in one place. So you don't have to write it down. You can find it all at jordanharbinger.com/deals. And don't forget, we've got worksheets for today's episode. If you want some of the drills and exercises talked about during the show in one easy place, that link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. Now for the conclusion of our episode with Nina Schick. Right now, the things that are more readily available are, I guess you categorize them as cheap fix, right? We kind of touched on this in the beginning of the show where, what was the classic example from earlier last year? It was like a Nancy Pelosi video that I think they had slowed down and sped up at different points. So it looked like she was, was it that she was drunk or I can't remember exactly the example here.
Yeah, so a cheap fake is basically the forebearer to a deep fake. And essentially, a cheap fake is a type of visual media that's been manipulated or edited or taken out of context in some misleading way, but it's not been done with AI, right? So it can be nothing very sophisticated at all. And the interesting thing about cheap fakes is that they have already been so effective over the past 10 years. Over the past 10 years, right, I work in geopolitics. I'm looking at how the internet, social media, and smartphones are changing politics all across the world. And one of the things that we've seen coming up again and again and again is the prevalence of cheap fakes, manipulated media to make service a political point or as a piece of disinformation. And it's been really interesting to track how during the course of 2020, these cheap fakes basically inundated the American political discourse in the context of the 2020 election. So the Pelosi video caused a furore because basically it wasn't done very well, but they slowed down her words to make her appear drunk, like she was slurring her words. And this was, of course, amplified by the president of the United States, right? So you're setting the tone from the top that in order to score political points, it's okay to use this kind of manipulated media, even though it's not done with AI, it's a cheap fake. It's already very, very effective. So if you consider how effective cheap fakes are now, then just think about where we're going to be in 5 to 10 years time when it's deep fakes, which nobody can tell if they're authentic or not. Everyone's already far more distrustful of what media they can trust or they can't trust. And the potential ramifications are vast. You start to see some of this in American discourse. So around the 2020 election, the use of cheap fakes was really prevalent, especially when the president started pushing disinformation that somehow the election was subject to widespread voter fraud. One of the ways he augmented this argument was by tweeting a lot of authentic videos, real videos of election workers, right, shifting ballots as though it were proof of ballots being stolen. Now, if I'm telling you in 5 or 7 years time, you can literally create a video of like the ballots being torn up and a recording. You could actually do this now, a recording of Joe Biden saying, ha, like burn those ballots. Imagine what that could potentially cause in terms of unrest, civil unrest. We saw what happened with the storming of the Capitol on January the 6th. I've seen the opinion polls consistently now showing that the majority of Republican voters believe that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. And if you have this kind of discord at the heart of a society, you just can't see how that is going to become any better in future. It's hard to overcome something like that.
What people don't realize is it's not just the video imagery that can be manipulated. It's also the vocal synthesis. And this is something that kind of freaked me out before, too, because as a guy with 1,500 plus hours of my own voice, you can use the same AI. The vocal synthesis is even easier. And there are podcast editing programs now where you can give it enough sample of your own voice, and then my producer can fill in a word or two, or if there's an awkward transition, or let's say I cut off in the middle of a word and he needs to fill it in, he can just type it and it will say it in my voice. And if it's one or two words, you just don't notice. It's imperceptible unless I'm listening to it very carefully. I can't even sense it. So of course, some casual listener can't do that. There's a YouTuber that I think is called Vocal Synthesis or VS. And basically he can just make anyone say anything. And you mentioned before pranksters and fraudsters. I can imagine a scenario in which I'm the controller for a major company and I get a call from the CEO and a few members of the board that say, listen, we need to take care of this. We need you to get $2 million ready and wire it right away. We missed a payment. Here's the banking and routing info. Do you have everything? Great. And then suddenly 2 months later, they come back and say, why did you wire $2 million to this random guy in Bangladesh or in New Jersey? What was the deal there? And you called me and told me to do that. You and three members of the board were on the phone at the same time. And I said, you answered my questions. What do you mean? And then that person goes to prison or something for embezzlement, right? Because it's so tricky that no one's going to, they're not going to have a recording of that phone call, right?
Well, do you know the crazy thing? It's already happened. You had the first reported major case of deepfake fraud. It was reported in the Wall Street Journal in 2019.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was the top executive of a energy company. He was the head of the British part of the company who had a phone call with the parent company where his boss was German. Now, the challenge of getting AI to synthesize your voice when deepfakes first started emerging was actually more difficult because everybody's voice is so different, the cadence, the tone, the accent. But in the 3 years since then, we've come a long, long way. So this executive had a phone call with his German boss, had no reason to suspect that he was speaking to anyone but his German boss. The accent was right, the cadence was right, the tone was right. His boss told him to wire $250,000 to a Hungarian energy supplier. Mm. He believed he was talking to his boss, even though it was out of the ordinary. He did it. And the alarm was only raised when his boss called him again and asked him to do it again. And then, you know, some alarm bells were raised. Like, this is a bit suspicious. And what it was fraudsters assisted by AI. Now, this would have been like a high value target. Whoever was behind it would have obviously invested quite a lot into the technology. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a high sum of money. But as the technology becomes accessible, you can see how this is not only going to be used for $250,000 or $2 million top business executives. One favorite thing that scammers love to do, right, is the call where your distressed relative is calling. I've been in a car accident. I've hit somebody with a car. Mm. I'm in an emergency. I'm in jail. Can you imagine how devastating that would be where you as a parent or a husband get a call, a distress call from one of your loved ones telling you they need money now? You're, of course, going to wire it to them. So you can see why this is going to become a favorite tool for pranksters, especially as the technology gets better. And especially, as you already mentioned, right now, you already have programs for that you can use as a podcaster, right? To kind of
sure.
With audio track of your voice where you can synthesize what you said. But when it's possible to do that with, you know, just a few seconds of a clip found on an Instagram story, a TikTok video, you know, anyone's voice can be emulated.
How do we defend against this? I mean, you mentioned AI detection methods and things like that, but it seems like we need to be skeptical, but not cynical. Because if we become cynical, then to use the cliche, right, the terrorists win. Because if Americans or Westerners or people in the UK, wherever you're listening, are busy fighting each other and we're just desperately trying to figure out which facts are actual facts, we can't respond to information warfare, propaganda, or other very large issues that require bipartisan cooperation. And that's really dangerous.
Absolutely. I think that is key, being skeptical, but not being cynical. It was very interesting because obviously I speak publicly about deepfakes and I wrote my book on deepfakes. When, for instance, certain things happen, people want to interpret it with their political slant on mm-hmm. it, right? They become almost too skeptical. So when Donald Trump went into the hospital with COVID and came out with obviously stage managed video and photographs, you know, preparing, trying to project this image of strength that he was fine. a lot of people contacted me on Twitter asking me, are these deepfake videos? You know, So it is important, again, when you think about the liar's dividend, which is, I think, already the most pervasive political effect of deepfakes before deepfakes themselves become ubiquitous, where people don't want to trust anything, that we approach this with skepticism without being cynics. However, the second point I'd make is that this to me is a paradigm change, right? It's a paradigm change in the way that we communicate, and it's a paradigm change in the way that we interact and think about the future of this content, which we're constantly going to be interacting with, this media that we're constantly going to be interacting with. So unfortunately, there is no silver bullet answer. It is something that has to be addressed at a society-wide level, just like a question like climate change, because ultimately you're talking about the integrity of the information ecosystem. And everything exists within this information ecosystem, unless you're, you know, one of those people who lives in the Amazon in a tribe and still hasn't had any contact with the outside world. Every single human being on this planet will come into contact with this information ecosystem. So how do you shore up the integrity of the system itself? There are some technical solutions that you can use, AI detection tools. You can also talk about media provenance, and Adobe has been leading an initiative here where you basically flip the equation on its head and you make the tools available for those people who are purveyors of the truth, whether they're journalists or activists, to be able to prove by capturing in the hardware of their devices that the piece of media that they're sharing is authentic, right? And they interestingly already created a prototype with TruePic and Qualcomm, the chip manufacturer, where they have a now working prototype of a phone where you can kind of like identify the authenticity of a piece of media throughout its life. In order for that to work, though, it has to become industry standard, right?
Right.
Otherwise, you basically have this question of like, well, who your authenticity approval photo versus my, again, the trust issue comes into play. And then second, you have to think about, and this is actually a larger question for society in the exponential age, right? We are living at a time where there's going to be more disruption and flux than potentially has ever been in the history of humanity. And the reason for that is because of the exponential technological change that's coming our way. So we have to think about how do we refit and reskin our society to be able to function in this new world that we're creating. We have to rethink policy. We have to rethink regulation. We have to rethink legal systems. All of this means networked approach. And I think the first step, it's overwhelming, but I think the first step is just conceptualizing it. And that's why I wrote my book, is just kind of understanding how does all of this fit into this information ecosystem? And what is this information ecosystem that's basically come into existence in the past 30 years? In the past, in our history, whenever there's been this huge moment of change in the history of human communication, it's always transformed the future of human society. So, for example, without the printing press, there wouldn't have been the Reformation. The world would look entirely different. And, you know, what would the world look like today if it hadn't been for a kind of the technology of the information age? You know, there was no internet, smartphone, social media. Again, a completely different place. So we're still reeling with those kind of changes that have come about in the last 30 years. And boom, now we're about to go into the age of synthetic media. It's going to take some time for society to catch up, but it is a society-wide effort.
Nina Schick, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is terrifying, and I'm probably not going to sleep for a few weeks on this. But no, really, honestly, though, it is fascinating. I think the technology is fascinating. It seems like we're going to have to become much more media literate as a society. And I guess the good news is that that seems to happen naturally, right? Like as people use computers and see these things more, like my own parents, 10 years ago, they were using AOL email and any video or any photo, they would have been like, wow. And I remember the first time I saw something that was Photoshopped, I was like, oh my gosh, it's a bird head on a man's body. It must be a real bird man. And now I'm like, okay, this is fake. I'm not an idiot, right? So that sort of happens organically. The problem, though, it seems like, is media literacy is trailing by like 10 or 20 years for many people. So there's going to be this window in which people just believe anything that they see. And I think we're in that window right now where you see a video of Nancy Pelosi looking drunk or Hillary Clinton stumbling around and you go, that's real. I saw it on InfoWars, you know, where the guy is just editing videos to make things look fake. it's going to be a while before we can clearly tell. And if we have our own bias, we have to mitigate that. So there's like this decade long or longer window where we're chasing this with our brains are chasing the computer technology to detect it. And like you said, there's going to be a time at which we can't do that anymore. So that is a little scary, but hopefully policy catches up in the meantime.
It's going to have to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've got some thoughts on this episode, but before we get into that, Bob Saget shares how humor can be used as a coping mechanism for pain and the necessity of reinvention for career longevity and fulfillment. Here's a preview. When did you know that you were funny? Like, were you a class clown the whole time, or was it
last year?
Last year, yeah.
Fame is bullshit. To let it go to your head, the moment you're cocky is the moment you've lost me as an audience. And a lot of people are attracted to it. You know, if I'd have known that secret as a teenager, I would have had a lot of girlfriends or just been quite the stud, because the key was not to care. I'm calm with my skin now. I don't know if it's evident during this thing. If I'm so calm, why the hell was I clicking this chapstick? I'm demonstrating.
Yeah, man.
This is what you were hearing. But you were hearing it in a much slower clicking.
It's like a hypnotic pattern for the listener.
So I put your listeners to bed. For me to walk around scared or thinking about people that are trying to hold me back, nobody's holding me back. If anybody's holding you back, it's you. You know, not you.
Yeah.
Not you, Jordan.
No.
If anyone's holding me back, it's you, Jordan.
This podcast is going to, you're going to see a massive onslaught of listeners for your show.
Talking Bob Saget's here for you is going to get 8 more people.
Provided we don't blow it in the last quarter here or the last 10 minutes here or whatever.
No, that's impossible. Well, no, we got more than that. Huh. We're in an hour and 12, and 2 of those minutes have to be cut.
You're standing there with John Stamos, Dave Coulier, and you think no one can see you. And I heard that there was a life-size doll.
Yeah, let's forget this one. This one's painful. You know too much. I'm going to have to kill you.
I know. I read your book.
When I get near you, I have to kill you.
Yeah, we can hang out when the plague lifts.
Oh, I can't wait. Maybe I'm alone here, but I don't like coronavirus. We don't have wet markets in downtown L.A., right?
No, we don't. At least not with, like, bats and pangolins and other stuff that you haven't heard of. No.
Oh, what the hell happened?
For more with Bob Saget on how the big breaks can come from one of life's worst disappointments and Bob's proven remedy for dealing with the haters, and we all have haters, check out episode 372 on The Jordan Harbinger Show with Bob Saget. Man, what a brilliant woman she is. You know, she speaks 7 languages. Wow, unbelievable. My mission on this show is to create more skeptics without birthing more cynics at the same time. And I'm telling you guys, this is about to become a major, major issue in everything from entertainment to marketing to politics to identity theft and beyond. Misinformation and disinformation, these have always existed, but nothing at the scale that we are seeing now, and nothing at the scale and level of sophistication that we will see in the near future. AI characters could generate an entire work history and resume. For example, they could pose as a journalist having interviewed dozens of super famous people, except all the videos are fake. They're just deep fakes. Personally, I'm looking forward to never doing interviews again. I'm just going to sit around making deep fakes of me talking with Barack Obama and Donald Trump. Maybe even at the same time. Who knows? Black PR firms, so black hat PR firms, right? The bad guys. They can be creating disinformation to lower competitor share price or otherwise harm corporations here in the United States and abroad. Our information landscape is becoming less and less stable and certainly less trustworthy. But we shouldn't just not trust any media. That's the issue we are seeing with these QAnon cultists and people who only read fake news blogs from the fringes that confirm their existing bias or conspiracy theories. We need AI detection tools because deepfakes will soon be so good humans won't be able to tell the difference. The insurance industry, by the way, I think they're going to be on the front end of this because they could be bankrupted with fake claims, video and photographic evidence. The technology here is really going to be something. They're going to have to use watermarking and special device ID signatures. Who knows? Blockchain something something could be a part of this, right? We just don't know. It's got to be tackled somehow. We know that disinformation is pervasive and working against us because we can't even seem to agree that Russia interfered with the 2016 election despite unanimous conclusions of all relevant intelligence and law enforcement agencies, foreign and domestic, academia, think tanks, etc. I'm not saying they put their thumb on the scale, but we know they at least tried. The idea behind this is not just to confuse the issue, But foreign powers, and frankly domestic powers, they want to break people's commitment to even staying or becoming informed at all in the first place. They want to make us, I sound like a conspiracy theorist myself now, they want to make us feel hopeless so that we just don't even try anymore. I also wonder, look, my son, he's 19 months old right now, 20 months old. Will he believe anything at all that he sees because of things like this? Anything he sees on a screen could have been created by somebody on a smartphone. And he may sort of natively slash intuitively know that he's not necessarily looking at real people. But that's a generation from now. Will it take this long? We won't be able to believe our own eyes and ears at all soon. By the way, we did a whole episode on Russian election interference. That's David Scheimer. That was episode 419. It goes through the historical basis for this. It's a lot of evidence, a lot of proof, United States doing it as well. It's not a new thing, but if you want a deep dive on that, episode 419. Rene DiResta, also on the show, we talked about social media and mass media manipulation. So if you want to do a deeper dive on that, she talks about the Soviet playbook and how that fools a lot of old people, not just old folks or quote-unquote dumb right-wing or dumb left-wing people. We dive into that whole topic with Rene DiResta on episode 420 of this show as well. Big thank you to Nina Schick. Her book title is Deep Fakes and the Infocalypse or Infocalypse. I guess that's one of those things that's better written and read than said. Links to her stuff will be in the website in the show notes. Please use our website links if you buy the books. All those things add up. They do help support the show. Worksheets for the episode are in the show notes. Transcripts are in the show notes. There's a video of this interview going up on our YouTube channel at jordanharbinger.com/YouTube. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram, or just hit me on LinkedIn. I'm teaching you how to connect with great people and manage relationships using systems, software, and tiny habits over at our 6-minute networking course. That course is free. I'm not selling you anything. You don't even need your dang credit card info or your name, nothing. Just go to jordanharbinger.com/course. I will teach you how to dig the well before you get thirsty and create relationships before you need them. And most of the guests on the show, they subscribe to the course. Come join us. You'll be in smart company where you belong. This show is created in association with Podcast One. My team is Jen Harbinger, Jace Sanderson, Robert Fogarty, Millie Ocampo, Ian Baird, Josh Ballard, and Gabriel Mizrahi. Remember, we rise by lifting others. The fee for this show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. If you know somebody who's interested in the future of media or just wants to be scared about what's going to be coming for us in technology world here, or somebody who's an outside-the-box thinker, I think this is a good one for them. Hopefully you find something great in every episode. Please share the show with those you care about. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen, and we'll see you next time. By the way, this episode is sponsored in part by Deliciously Ella, Delicious Ways to Feel Better. This is a podcast with informative, honest conversations around mental and physical health from leading experts, hosted by Ella and Matthew Mills. They talk about gut health to anxiety, imposter syndrome to body image. We talk about imposter syndrome a lot on this show as well, as you're well aware. Delicious Ways to Feel Better is helping everyone cope through the uncertainties of life, and you'll find it available wherever you get your podcasts.